The Six Nations Show on OTB Sports Radio.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
It's spinning! It's spinning!
Updates, analysis and opinion across all OTB channels from start to finish.
Gone on it!
I've never seen a team like Ireland before.
This is OTB Sports Radio.
OTB Sports Radio.
All right, good afternoon, and you're very welcome along to episode 3 of our Six Nations show here on Off the Ball. Every game week between now and mid-March, we'll be live on Thursday afternoons, 12 on the dot, streaming on offtheball.com, on the Go Loud app, YouTube, and across all the Off the Ball social platforms, and of course, OTB Sports Radio as well. Brought to you by Vodafone, team of us, everyone in. Get your comments into us now on our YouTube stream or on Twitter at Off the Ball. 2 wins from 2 for Andy Farrell. And the second one, a much big improvement on the first. A bonus point win against Wales just over a week ago sees Ireland share top spot with France heading into week 3. But this is England week. England at Twickenham as well. And back to the scene of both a huge high and a huge low over the last couple of years. The 2018 Grand Slam victory as well as the 57-15 demolition before the World Cup. Probably a day when I think all of us realised, Cian, that we were headed for trouble. I'm Neil Tracy. Cian Tracy is alongside me again.
Yeah, we were trying not to remember that. Even in terms of what England did to Ireland in the Six Nations, that game was sort of when alarm bells were ringing, and I think when what happened in Twickenham was, you know, the sort of
the one at the Aviva last year was, if you want an Irish example, I think it's the fire alarm goes off in the pub, yeah, and we all stay sitting there sipping, yeah, because we can't see the smoke,
yeah,
or you can't see a fire.
Yeah, and then, you know, like, they were so impressive in what they did in that game, and you think about how they started the game, and then there were sort of, you know, excuses put in the way that, in fairness, they'd come off the hard training camp in Portugal and went straight into the Lions Den, if you will, but it was still awesome what England did. And yeah, Ireland never recovered, did they, from what happened to England in that Six Nations game, and the further scar tissue happened. So it'll be interesting to see if any of that lingers, I think, this weekend. But then again, if you look at what happened to England at the World Cup, they have their own potential scar tissue too. So there's a lot at stake here this weekend, isn't there?
Yeah, and I know, like, as we were saying, it was only a World Cup warm-up, but I can imagine for some players that defeat, it has to be lingering a little bit, because that was an absolute thumping. And I'd be thinking of someone maybe like Ross Byrne. I hope he actually does get a bit of time out in the pitch this weekend, and I hope it goes well, because, you know,
he became the fall guy.
He did, and for, I think, pretty harshly as well.
He wasn't the only Irish out half who became the fall guy last year, because you look at Jack Arty, who was bombed out, yeah, of the squad because he played in the Japan game. But I think any out half would have struggled, even Johnny Sexton that day, because the pack were beaten up so much, and that's what happened in Dublin as well. And that if that happens again this weekend, I don't think it will, but then, you know, Ireland are going to struggle. But it's about kind of dominating the collision area, which they absolutely got blown away by in Dublin and then in Twickenham. But I think, I know we're going to get into it, but without a certain number of key players, Ireland, I think, don't have that same fear factor that maybe they've had in the last couple of years going there.
Yeah, certainly. We obviously had a break week last week. Fallow week, you call it, in the Six Nations.
Yeah, watching the Pro 14 just doesn't do it, does it?
Is it only in the Six Nations that it can be referred to as a fallow week?
Potentially, yeah, potentially. But you kind of realise when it's not there how much you miss it, because it came around so quickly at the start after the World Cup, and then you're like, I was watching Munster and the Kings and Leinster and the Cheetahs, and
yeah, Munster and the Kings was brutal.
It was very,
like, I was watching at home. Were you at it?
No.
All right, yeah.
I watched sat it through home. It though.
After Munster scored their third try, I was like, I'm done with this.
I couldn't stop thinking. It was on an Irish Independent Park, and I couldn't stop thinking that the Irish 20s now play there, and the Irish 20s would have beaten, I think, that Kings team comfortably,
yeah,
which is, and you know, it's terrible for the Pro 14. That's another issue altogether. But it's great to come back into a Six Nations weekend like this, where I think, you know, you can say it's a big test of where Ireland are, but I think it's a big test of where all six teams are this weekend, because there's so much at stake for everyone. You look at England, you know, their first home game after the World Cup, like there's a lot of pressure on them to deliver. You look at the Wales game, they need to bounce back after what Ireland did to them, and it's a big test of where this French team actually are. And then similarly for Scotland and Italy, you know, Scotland going to Rome, neither of them want the wooden spoon. So it's a cracking weekend, and week 3 always feels like the big one anyway, doesn't it, the Six Nations?
Yeah, and I think even particularly this year, it's actually really tough to get a read on where a lot of teams, mm-hmm, are, because for Ireland, the game against Scotland it was so different to the game against Wales and even the Scotland game. The weather was an issue as well. You know, it definitely played a part. England and Scotland's game, Calcutta Cup in round two, obviously the weather was a complete equaliser in that and completely destroyed the match. Now, England were delighted to get away with a win, but at the same time, you can't really get a proper read off England or really off Scotland off the back of it as well. And then with Wales as well, started with Italy, they were absolutely fantastic and then came to Ireland and were so disappointing. So I think almost every team, maybe aside from France, you're kind of looking at going, it's just very difficult to actually figure out where on the bar they are.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. This weekend will tell us a lot. I think if you look at Ireland, you know, they dug out a really gritty win against Scotland. They made a big step up. As poor as I thought Wales were, quite poor.
But
Ireland were very good as well. A lot of those defensive errors that Wales made were down to the pressure that Ireland were putting on her. So they made a step up. England were very poor in Paris in week one, but they made a step up, albeit in atrocious conditions. But just like Ireland, I think took a lot from, you know, the grittiness of the win that they got against Scotland. I think England will do the same. And they have another level, or two levels even, to go this weekend. So I think that's why it's set up so perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Let's just run through the Irish team, actually. It was named yesterday afternoon. So it's an unchanged starting 15 from the win against Wales. Jordan Larmour at fullback. Andrew Conway and Jacob Stockdale continue on the wings. Robbie Henshaw and Bundiaki in the centre, while Conor Murray and Johnny Sexton team up in the halfbacks once again. In the front row then, Cian Healy, Rob Herring and Tadhg Furlong, Ian Henderson and James Ryan in the second row, with the back row, Peter O'Mahony, Josh van der Fleer and CJ Stander retained, despite the fact that Quaylen Doris is back fit again, having missed the game against Wales. Doris is on the bench, as are Ronan Kelleher, Dave Kilcoyne, Andrew Porter, Devon Toner, John Cooney, Ross Byrne and Keith Earls. Cian, as much as people would probably want to see Quaylen Doris given another chance, and was really disappointing that his debut only lasted the 3 or 4 minutes against Scotland, it's very hard to not pick an unchanged team after the way everyone performed against Wales.
100%. You know, I've been a big advocate of, you know, picking on form, because I don't think Ireland did that last year. And I think in fairness to Andy Farrell, he is picking on form. You look at Peter O'Mahony, you know, there was a lot of pressure that he came into the Six Nations under a lot of pressure, and he's delivered. Similarly, CJ Sander, we've talked a bit about him on this show. He's gone back to number 8 again and delivered 2 man-of-the-match performances. Caelan Doris, like, he is going to be the future number 8, and I think the Italy game, we might even see him getting a start. That would seem like a good game, but it was a concussion that he got, you know, a head injury in that first game. He's already had a head injury this season with Leinster. The guy is 21. He's got a massive career ahead of him. I don't think there was a need to sort of push him back into what's going to be an unbelievably physical game. I still think that that is the way to go forward with the back row, having Caelan Doris and CJ Stander there to take a little bit of pressure off CJ Stander. But for this weekend, I don't think you could drop anyone. There's a couple of players you could make the case for throughout the team, maybe like someone like a Dave Kilcoyne. But I think, you know, you got to reward the form because they were so good against Wales.
Yeah, Dave Kilcoyne was who I was coming to next. Like, it feels with England, if you are to beat England, you have to be getting gainland success. Mm. And it's where Ireland struggled massively in those two games in the last 12-13 months against England. Cian Healy's obviously a very good ball carrier, but Dave Kilcoyne, over the last year or two, it seems like every single time he gets his hand on the ball, he's gaining probably a metre or two more than someone else probably would. And given the day that's in it, where you have maybe Peter O'Mahony, Van der Fleer, CJ Stander, we know Stander is going to carry loads throughout the game, but he's probably not going to he's not going to force his way over the gain line as much as he would have been doing a few years ago. But having someone like Dave Kilcoyne, I think, in there just adds another big ball carrier in.
Yeah, I think it does. He's looking more explosive, I think, in the last year or two. And you look at someone like Andrew Conway, who's kind of come into his own. They're similar age. Dave Kilcoyne's a couple of years older. But, you know, they've taken a little bit of time to get here. But I think having Kilcoyne to come off the bench, I know I hate that term, finishers, but like, it is so important to have that bit of oomph off the bench as well. And I think Kilcoyne gives you that. And I think the gap between him and Healy now is probably as tight as it has ever been, really, to be fair. Kilcoyne had a bit of an injury at the start of the season, which, you know, kind of hindered him in terms of his Irish claims as well. But again, I didn't see Cian Healy doing enough wrong to warrant him being bombed out of the team for this weekend. So I think Farrell has got to be fair to the guys who have delivered in the last game. And yeah, you know, if they don't deliver this weekend, then you can kind of have those debates. But I think having not picked on form at the World Cup, and I know like lots of people, I can see people have the argument that are we not learning any lessons by going with the tried and trusted throughout the Six Nations, while you look at France, who are blooding a lot of young players. We talked about it, I think it was on the first week of the show, about the World Cup cycle. Like, there's a long time to go yet, you know, in terms of blooding these guys. Caelan Doris has got a lot of time. Ronan Kelleher, like, time is on these guys' side. And I think having them learning off guys who are now playing in form, who, let's forget, just because they had a bad year, they didn't turn into bad players overnight. And I think we're seeing more evidence of that now.
Yeah, and, like, not to go to harp back on about the four-year cycle and maybe how it's maybe a bit overhyped. Like, look at James Ryan. Summer 2017, he made his debut.
Yeah.
The top-class players are going to...
Jacob Stockdale as well.
Yeah. Like, I mean, they looked perfectly at home in test level rugby within probably less than 12 months, within 6 months of making their international debuts. So there's no, you don't have to absolutely rush them in to get someone involved on day one of the Six Nations 4 years out. Caelan Doris, whether he starts next week or the week after or whenever he starts, there's a fair chance he's going to be there and he's going to be in his prime.
Yeah.
When the next World Cup comes around in 4 years.
All things being equal, Caelan Doris and Ronan Kelleher will be starting the first World Cup pool game in 2023.
Yeah.
But they're both young guys. They both had injuries this season, you know, at sort of unfortunate times. So I think they possibly would be starting this game. But I think, again, Farrell is being, not loyal is the wrong word, but I mean, like, you think back to the World Cup and when, you know, you knew the Ireland team no matter how guys played the week before, whereas I think it's a little bit different now. And Farrell has made, you know, changes throughout the team. I mean, look, Robbie Henshaw's back in now as well. You know, that's obviously down to Gary Ringrose being injured, but even like someone like Rob Herring, you know, has come in too and played very well, and he's another one who's played well and I don't think deserves to lose his place in the team as much as Ronan Kelleher, I think, is that next man in.
Yeah, absolutely. Do we actually think though that, while we spoke about how, you know, Stander, Peter O'Mahony, Keane Healy, they're, you know, perfectly deserving of keeping their places. Do they have the carrying power?
Yeah.
More so in terms of the actual quality of it and the impact rather than the volume, because we know the volume is going to be there. It'll always be there. You'll never question the intensity of it.
I think they've got to be smarter in how they go about it. I think we've seen that. I mean, the line speed looks to be was much quicker in that Wales game. And I think, you know, when you're going up against an England team with the two Vunipolas, a fit and firing Manu Tuilagi, it looks like he's going to play, but we don't know how fit he actually is. I think that's a very different beast to what we're going to see this weekend with Joe Marler probably starting and Tom Curry at number eight. So while it's going to be unbelievably aggressive, it's not going to be as, I don't think, physical, like what Eddie Jones calls it, the wanting to destroy people. But it's not going to be, I don't think, as bad as that, because when you take out the Vunipolas, they're not the same. They don't have the same weapons. So I think Ireland have just got to be smart. We saw more evidence of that in the Wales game, using their back three more, getting the ball to the edges, you know, putting little kicks through. I think that's how you get around this English rush defence, which is obviously going to be blitzing in your face.
Yeah. Chris Jones, BBC Rugby Union correspondent, is with us on the line now. Chris, afternoon.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Not too bad now, Chris. You would have just heard us there. We briefly mentioned Manu Tuilagi, who is back and available. Team is going to be named tomorrow, I believe. Are we likely to see Manu start?
Yeah, I think it's almost certain that Manu's going to come back in to start. And then it's just what combination Eddie Jones goes for in midfield. Does he go to the combination that played against New Zealand and South Africa in the World Cup semi and the World Cup final, which is Ford, Farrell and Tuilagi, or the combination that that took Australia part in the quarterfinal, which is Farrell 10 and then Tuilagi 12 and Henry Slade at 13. I'm struggling to see how Slade comes straight back in, given he's not played since December with a fractured ankle, but Tuilagi's only been a couple of weeks, so I'd expect him to come in.
On Manu Tuilagi, though, he has always been a player that Ireland have seriously struggled to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's won his last five against Ireland. I mean, you go back to, what was it, 2011 World Cup warm-up games where he really burst onto the scene. I think it was in Dublin. He scored an individual try and he was great, wasn't he, in the Aviva last year, right from the start where they threw over the top of the line out. He came storming onto it. And it's just when England have been at their best in 2019, it's been all about power, all about dynamism, whether it's Tuilagi or the Vunipolas, Carl Sinclair, Itoje. They even threw Joe Kokonasiga into the mix in the warm-up game at Twickenham in August. So Ireland have struggled to cope with that. I just wonder whether you take a few Vunipolas out, as has been the case, whether England aren't quite going to be able to chuck that firepower at Ireland like they did, say, twice last year.
Yeah, on Vunipola, I was listening to your own Rugby Union podcast a few days ago, and I would say you would have recorded it Monday before we knew that Maka Vunipola was going to be out, and you were actually speculating at the time, possibly would you be starting Ellis Genge or Joe Marler, even ahead of Maka Vunipola. So as much as he's been lost from the game for England, like, still having Joe Marler and Ellis Genge there as well, they're two absolutely quality players, and from what you would have been saying on Monday as well, you know, the jury was out whether or not Maka Vunipola was going to be there anyway.
Yeah, and Mako is, look, you could argue a great case for him being the best loosehead prop in the world, and probably the best loosehead prop of the last decade, arguably. However, you know, Jones had the choice of playing him in Paris, and Mako was fit, and Jones has been keen to point out that this wasn't an injury decision. He just picked Marler to start and Genge to come off the bench, and Genge's development has been really huge over the past couple of years. Jones talks about him being a bit of a sort of project player for them when he brought him into the setup sort of 2016 kind of time, that summer tour of Australia. He was dead raw, and now he's developing into an international class loosehead prop. So look, I always think you start Maka Vunipola if and when possible, but the World Cup final showed that he can be got at scrum time, even though the problems may have been more on the other side. That's where Joe Marler is especially proficient. So, yeah, I think it's obviously a blow, but the way Genge has come on, the quality Marler still has at the top level, England should be okay in that number one position.
And are we expecting then Marler 1, Genge 17?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Eddie Jones has been in a bit of an odd mood this week. And, you know, as always, he's tried to make the point that it doesn't matter whether you start the game or finish the game. But given the way Genge plays, fully effervescent, you know, I don't think he's properly had his scrummaging magnified at the top level. Just he's not started that many games at test level. So I would still think that Jones, who actually, regardless of everything around Eddie Jones, is reasonably conservative when it comes to selection, I still think he will go Joe Marler to start loosehead and then bring Genge on. But what he's been doing with Luke Cowan-Dickie at hooker and with Genge is now starting to bring them on 48, 50, 52 minutes rather than 65, 70. So I think we might see a new look England front row coming on quite early on the weekend.
On Eddie Jones, you just kind of half hinted it there as well, and it was something myself and Keane were chatting about off air before we came on, how Eddie has been probably a little bit quieter than normal this week. There certainly seems to be less verbal grenades being chucked in there from him over the last few days. And as you were saying, Keane, as well, he's doing all the press conferences this week as well.
Yeah, Chris, what do you make of that? I mean, Eddie Jones is doing, I think, is it all four press conferences this week? And then you factor in the game as well. I mean, that seems like a bit of a ploy. And obviously, he's not giving much away when we're used to weeks like this, a few grenades or two. What do you think's going on there?
Yeah, it's a difficult one because the more if we talk about it, that's kind of what Eddie Jones wants us to do. You know, he wants us to be talking about him and his media strategy. Ultimately, I think, you know, he had a bit of a shocker, if we're brutally honest, in that France week where he spoke about brutal physicality. He spoke about England being the greatest team of all time. I didn't really mind him going down the greatest team of all time route because at least it was showing that he knew England had to press the reset button after the World Cup. I think the danger was always going to be when you've got to the top of Everest and fall just before the summit, how do you get the players back in a good mental place? So the fact he was setting that ambitious goal, I don't think was the worst thing, but obviously it all fell flat. I think the point Jones is trying to make is that people criticise him when he says stuff and people criticise him when he doesn't say stuff. Now, clearly there's a middle ground and there's nuance and there's sometimes when his mind games are brilliant and sometimes when they fall flat. That's what has happened a lot over the past 4 or 5 years. And, you know, Eddie Jones having fun and games with the media has been going on since minute one of his tenure back in 2015-16. So this is nothing particularly new, but I think he's trying to say, look, I'll speak all week, but, you know, if you don't want me to lob any grenades, I won't. So he's been almost at pains to say as little as possible, hasn't he?
We need that to change, don't we? With Warren Gatland, gone as well. I mean, we need, from our point of view, we need a bit more of this.
Sure.
Even with hindsight, I just thought the comments the French week were just crazy because I just think the one thing you don't want to do when you're playing France is challenge them. Lavish them with praise. Make them think they're absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. Not really Eddie Jones' style, though.
It's not really, no, is it?
But we definitely need a grenade or two. Chris, you've got to work on that for us over this side of the world.
I know. Well, look, to be honest, what we can't do is bite the hand that feeds us in the media because Eddie Jones, you know, there's been more Eddie Jones on the back page of the papers. There's been more Eddie Jones airtime and more airtime for England rugby in this part of the world than than previously. So Eddie Jones has helped put the England rugby on the media map, if you like. So yeah, I don't think any of us are silly enough to say, oh, Eddie, don't say anything, because we know it's all part of the fun and games. But it has just been noticeable this week that Andy Farrell looks to be cool and calm and in control. He's named his team really early on a Tuesday or Wednesday for a Sunday game. Eddie Jones has still got, you know, a little bit of uncertainty over whether he's going to, who's going to start at hooker, who's going to start at loose head, who's going to start at 9, at 10, at 12, at 13. And it's just interesting how the team in Ireland who had the change of head coach looks to be almost more settled than the team in England who have kept that head coach continuity. But look, giving England back at Twickenham should be a different prospect to what we've seen in Paris and Edinburgh.
Yeah, on scrum half, you mentioned there, Will Hines, Ben Youngs has been the back and forth in the opening two games. It's obviously something we would have had to deal with a lot coming into this, where everyone was saying, does John Cooney pip Conor Murray to start? And the argument people were putting forward for a Cooney start might be, you know, it's the kick up the backside that Conor Murray might need. And Eddie Jones actually went and did that then by dropping Ben Youngs, putting in Willie Hines. And from the impact Youngs made when he came off the bench at Murrayfield, it certainly looked like he actually did get that kick up the backside that he really needed. And is he now in a position where he might be getting the nine shirt back this weekend?
Yeah, very possibly. I mean, it's a funny one because Eddie Jones always says it doesn't matter whether you start or end the game. However, you know, Ben Youngs doesn't really get dropped to the bench very often. I mean, it happened in Paris in 16 for the Grand Slam game when Danny Kerr played and scored. But in general, when Youngs has been fit, he's started. And sometimes Eddie Jones has let Youngs go 80 minutes. I mean, he did it in South Africa a few times in 2018 when poor Ben Spencer's on the bench not getting a look in. So how he plays his nines, either way, whoever starts, I think we'll see the other one come on quite early, because whereas recently, I think Dublin last year, there was Dan Robson on the bench who didn't even get on. He clearly didn't rate Dan Robson very highly. He clearly didn't rate Ben Spencer very highly. They're both out the squad, but he rates Ben Youngs super high, and he rates Willie Hines really highly. So I think he's looking to get a good 80 minutes out of either of those number nine. So whoever starts, I think we'll see the other one come on probably on around about 50.
I find it's kind of hard to get a read on where England are at the moment because they were so poor for large parts against France. And obviously the weather conditions at Murrayfield a couple of weeks back were a complete equaliser. You can't really take anything from it aside from it was a win and it was dug out. But is that the most important thing, that they were in a game like that and got through it and got through into this into the break week ahead of Ireland?
Yeah, 100%. They needed that win. I mean, I know they'd only lost twice, World Cup final and Paris, but it's England rugby, and you then lose three on the bounce, and suddenly people are going, "Well, hold on, what's happened to this team that crushed the All Blacks?" So it was really important to get the win. I think England's game control in that final 20, George Ford, Ben Youngs, the pack, the replacements was excellent, and they got the win. But you're right, it was a complete mess of a game. You can't take too much from it. So I think we're all a bit torn here between saying, right, when England are on the money, they can rip teams to shreds like they did to Ireland in Dublin, like they did to the All Blacks, like they did to France at Twickenham. When they're good, they're really, really good. But we haven't seen that in three matches. Obviously, conditions had a huge factor at Murrayfield. So I think we're just waiting on Sunday to see whether England can produce one of those authoritative, dominant performances that will make everyone think, OK, that's the real England, rather than the team that got crushed in the World Cup final, looked poor in Paris and admittedly won in Edinburgh, but, you know, didn't fire a huge many shots. Of course, that was obviously down to the weather a lot of the time.
Chris, what's the reaction over there been like to Tom Curry playing number 8? I think over here we're all a bit confused when you look at, you know, how well he played in the World Cup. Easily one of the best flankers in the world. I mean, I was chatting to Victor Costello this week, who switched a bit in his time, but again, just can't understand why Eddie Jones is moving one of your best players. When, to be fair, you've got like Sam Simmons, Don Brandt, Nathan Hughes, you know, ready-made replacements who, I don't know, Eddie Jones just doesn't fancy them. What's the reaction been like that over there?
Yeah, I think similar. I mean, we have Jamie Heaslip on our Rugby Union Weekly pod a fair bit, and he's been pretty outspoken about it. You know, that's a guy with 100 international caps at 8. It's not something you can just pick up, whether it's patrolling the backfield, whether it's controlling at the base of the scrum, you know, however it might be in attack and defence, it is a position that requires a fair bit of nuance and experience. So I think most people are a little bit taken aback by it. But this is the thing, Eddie Jones, if he doesn't want to cap a player, he's not going to do it. So there's been a lot of pressure on Ben Youngs the last year for his form. But Eddie Jones only took 2 nines to the World Cup. He's incredibly reluctant to play a Dan Robson or a Ben Spencer or to bring back Danny Kerr. Number eight, he used to really like Nathan Hughes. He's clearly gone off Hughes for what reason, no one's quite sure. And Don Brandt, he either doesn't rate full stop or doesn't think he's ready. Sam Simmons got a gig in 2018, and I think Jones decided he was too light to play Test rugby at eight. So that's where we are. And he's the danger is that you lose Curry's excellence as a flanker by trying to shoehorn him into number eight. But Eddie Jones has done this with his back row in the autumn of 18. He played Mark Wilson, who's a flank, at number eight, and Wilson held up his end quite well. So his thinking is, if it's not going to be a Billy Vunipola, he's not going to pick a Billy Vunipola light. He's going to have a different way of playing. However, you know, I think we all know that it's putting an enormous amount of pressure on Tom Curry, especially as everyone's scrutinising his game, when, as a flanker, he goes around stealing ball and whacking people and carrying. He's been one of the best in the world.
Does that put a lot of pressure then on the English scrum, just to give Tom Curry some stable ball at the back there to be playing with? Because if Ireland are even getting just a half nudge, even a metre or so, just to make that ball a little bit wobbly there at the back of the scrum for Curry to be dealing with, like, is that somewhere where you think Ireland could just be kind of targeting a little bit?
It'd be interesting
your guys' views on the Ireland scrum, because Eddie Jones said yesterday that Six Nations these days increasingly about set piece and breakdown, and we know the Irish are going to come hard at the breakdown. So where's the Irish scrum at? Because if they feel they can go for England like the box did, then that's going to make it tough for Curry, isn't it?
Yeah, and to be honest, it's probably been a little bit off in comparison to the last couple of years. Obviously, you've John Fogarty coming in now as scrum coach, taking over from Greg Feek, who's left. And I think in the first couple of games, they've given away a few penalties, which particularly in the Scotland game, which just felt unlike them. They were always, you'd absolutely put your house on them retaining their ball non-stop in the last 4 years or so. But just in the last year, well, not year, in the last couple of games in the Six Nations, they have just looked a little bit shaky at times.
Yeah, two French referees, I mean, which you've got to say, because some of the refereeing in both the games was a bit wild. And then you have, you know, the Wales assistant coach Humphreys coming out and kind of putting the pressure this week on Tadhg Furlong, which was quite interesting. I actually bumped into Furlong yesterday out in the High Performance Centre that Ireland are based in now. And, you know, I was just asking him what he thought, and he said he genuinely hadn't heard it. So I had to get out my phone, show him what the quotes were. But I mean, I won't tell you exactly what he said, but he basically just laughed and was making the point that he must be confused because I can't sweep across that side in the scrum. So I think it was all a bit maybe all ado about nothing, but, you know, it puts that little bit of doubt in Jaco Pieper's the ref, isn't he
this is, again? Yeah.
And like, Ireland have struggled with Pieper in the past. They haven't had much luck with referees in the first three games. But it does put a little bit of pressure. But Andy Farrell came out yesterday, you know, and has backed him to the hilt. And if what Furlong said to me is anything to go by, I don't think he's very concerned about it. But yeah, look, Greg Feek did a super job in the Irish scrum, and it's probably something that people don't recognise what the backroom coaches do. And you just have to look at how quickly the All Blacks snapped him up, and he's working with them now. That just shows how good this guy is. But I wouldn't have too many fears about the scrum. I think especially with Curry at number eight and not having Mako, as good as a scrummager as Marler is. But I don't think there's many fears. And I think CJ Stander and Conor Murray are definitely going to go after Curry at the base of the scrum. CJ Stander was up for media yesterday and talking about, oh, he's heard this theory that, you know, we can get after him, that he's a great player. But I mean, Ireland are definitely going to try and target him, because it's those, like Chris said, those little nuances, like the back of the scrum, where you are positionally, because if you're half a yard out at this level, you know, you can be taken apart.
Mm-hmm. Chris, what's been the view from England on Andy Farrell and Ireland's start so far?
Yeah, I think it's funny, isn't it? Because when was it? End of 2018, when Ireland were the best team in the world and beating the All Blacks and winning a slam. Everyone was talking about Joe Schmidt's detail and talking about how, you know, his control of the setup was a big reason behind the success. And now everyone's talking about how Andy Farrell's brought a bit more of a relaxed air, a bit more of a, you know, a bit of a freedom to the Ireland players. They feel they can express themselves on and off the pitch. So it's obviously, you know, I think rugby players, you know, sometimes a simple tweak in an environment can make a big difference. And clearly, in terms of off the pitch, Andy Farrell has brought that little bit of fun back to the setup. On it, I think we're seeing an influence from Leinster, I think, in the way they're defending at the moment. They think they've tweaked Andy Farrell's defensive system to bring more of a Leinster system in terms of the the two-man bat rather than leaving Stockdale a little bit in no man's land. So I think they've been able to tweak things technically. But what you're hearing a lot from here in England is that the camp feels a bit more liberated, and it feels like a bit of a sea change from the Joe Schmidt era, even though Farrell was such a key part of that. And I think, look, Eddie Jones is contracted to England for another 18 months. Whether he goes through the next World Cup is all up in the air at the moment. And I think in terms of the narrative, if an English coach was to come to Twickenham and storm Twickenham, I think it'll get a lot of people talking about, you know, how Andy Farrell is working over in Ireland, Stuart Lancaster's working over in Ireland, and these former England coaches are no longer involved in the setup. So it's always been bubbling away with their success, even though I think most people agree post-2015 it was time for a fresh change. So there's plenty going on, and I think, you know, if England were to lose this weekend, then people might go, well, what's the deal? Is Eddie Jones staying? Put pressure on the RFU to come up with some kind of plan. But I think if they do get that kind of performance back, they can just put the France game down to about 40, the World Cup final down to a World Cup final, win in Edinburgh, beat Ireland, and things seem back on track. So it just has the feeling of a fairly decisive game for England in the context of their championship.
And then obviously we have the Andy versus Owen narrative to go along with it.
Yeah, he's sick of talking about that, really, isn't he? He was down in Cork last week, which was the off week, and he really opened up about it. It was the first time I'd seen him, you know, speak so openly, and it was so inevitable yesterday that it was going to happen again. And straight away at the start of the press conference, you know, as is people's job, went for it, and he wasn't biting at all, saying that, yeah, I've been onto him a few times, but I'm onto him every week, you know, FaceTime with my grandson. I think you've got to remember that. I mean, this is his son.
Yeah.
But it's so strange to think that, like, you know, Andy Farrell is sending Bundy Aki out this weekend, you know, to do damage to his son. It's a bizarre, it's a great story, but it's just a bizarre sort of mental thing to get your head around. But I think Chris is right. This laid-back approach, I mean, not laid-back approach, but more relaxed. I was a bit sceptical when the players kind of came out, you know, initially, and everyone was making a point of saying it.
Yeah.
But there's been little things in the media, you know, I was mentioning to you off air, you know, the team is being named on a Tuesday, normally Wednesday this week, because it's a Sunday game. But it's obviously coming out the day before, which it did under Joe Schmidt, and it used to drive Joe Schmidt absolutely mad. Farrell doesn't seem to care, doesn't make any issue about it, which just says to me, like, he's a man in control. He knows what his team is. He doesn't let the little things sort of bother him. Now, if he was to lose this weekend, you know, the wheels could come off and we'll see if he's as relaxed. But I don't think that that's a kind of a message that the players are really trying to force out. I think there is actually a naturally more relaxed feel around the place.
Chris, just quickly before we leave you go as well, Wales and France this weekend. The Wales team was named in the last half an hour or so. Two changes for them. Gareth Davies and Ross Moriarty both come in. So just to run through it, Wyn Jones, Ken Owens, Dylan Lewis, Jake Ball and Alwyn Jones in the second row. Ross Moriarty, Talupa Faletau and Justin Tipperich. Gareth Davies, Dan Biggar is fit. Hadley Parks and Nick Tompkins again in the centre. Josh Adams is also back fit. Lee Halfpenny then at fullback, and George North on the wing as well. It's probably going under the radar as a game, this one, Wales-France, because we're all talking about Ireland-England. Certainly over here, I think Wales-France is going under the radar. But this is going to be absolutely fascinating as well. It seems like the break weekend came at an awful time for France and at probably a brilliant time for Wales.
Yeah, and I think this game, we're going to find out a huge amount. And really, you know, I've heard on our pod the other day, the first two rounds of the Six Nations, I don't actually think has told us a huge amount. Yes, Ireland have won two games. They've both been at home. France, likewise. Scotland have lost twice. That was maybe expected, as was the case with Italy. Wales beat Italy at home, lose in Dublin, a place they don't often win. England, you know, a bit up and down after the World Cup. This weekend, I think, is going to tell us a whole lot more. Are France good enough? Are they fit enough? Are they disciplined enough to go on the road and win a place like Cardiff, which they've not won in 10 years? And are Wales good enough to beat a resurgent France side, given loads is happening in terms of on and off the field with their changes with a whole new coaching regime? And they've got some real strength in some areas, Wales, number nine and back row, which is maybe borne out by these proactive changes. Other areas, 10, midfield, they're looking a little bit light, maybe front five as well. So I'm not really sure what to make of Wales under PVAC. It's really, really early days, but I think Saturday's a big one. And I think if France win, you're going to have to back them for the slam. Likewise, if Ireland win at Twickenham, you're going to have to back them for the slam. But if Wales and England win their home games, it's a four-horse race as it is at the moment. So it's, 5 o'clock Sunday, we're going to have a real idea about where this Six Nations is heading, I think.
Yeah, a, f- a, a France, or sorry, a Wales and an England win this weekend does make it really interesting, because all of a sudden you're looking back and thinking, you know what, that losing bonus point that England pretty much stole against France all of a sudden becomes absolutely huge. Small little things like that play out.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Sean Edwards coming back to Wales is a huge subplot as well. And they've got a point to prove, because, like we mentioned earlier, that game against Italy, you know, was just a walk in the park. That said more about Italy than it did about Wales. It's interesting to see Nick Tompkins get another goal. I'm really a big fan of him. I think I had him as one to watch, but he was poor against Ireland. Like, Robbie Henshaw really, really went after him. So he's gone up against Fakatawa, I presume, this weekend. Like, that's going to be an even tougher challenge. But, you know, Wales are tough to beat at home. And France haven't won there, like Chris said, in a while. So, yeah, it's all set up.
And Chris, obviously, as Keane said there, you have the Sean Edwards factor to throw in as well.
Yeah, that's huge. And, you know, Sean Edwards, I saw in the UK Daily Mail today was saying that he's not coming back to try and, you know, he's not going to celebrate if he wins, because he's got a huge amount of respect for the Welsh team, the Welsh players and the Welsh people. But, you know, what Sean Edwards and Warren Gatland always had when they were in charge of Wales was the ability to get the team off for one big performance, big one-off performances. And, you know, Edwards could still be coaching Wales. He says that he might have stayed if they'd offered him a four-year deal rather than a two-year deal. He was offered a four-and-a-half-year deal at France. So I think there's going to be a big part of Sean Edwards. They'll be desperate to make a winning return to Cardiff. And the one area where Wales looked really suspect against Ireland was defensively, which has been traditionally an area of strength for Wales, especially the Slam last year, and an area where France have traditionally been pretty average has been defensively. And even though maybe their structures aren't perfect yet, they're certainly getting off the line, hitting with more energy. And there's an attitude and a kind of aggression about the French defence we've not seen in donkey's years. So it's kind of set up really nicely this weekend, because we've got a defensively dogged French team against maybe a defensively suspect Wales team, and a Wales team that might want to play a bit more rugby under PVAC against the France team that may want to be a little bit more conservative. So I think it's all set up for a pretty tough one to call in Cardiff.
Quick predictions before we leave you go, Chris.
Do you know what? I said on my pod the other day, I thought England would win by 8 and I thought France would win. And in the last 24, 48 hours, I've heard a fair few things that makes me think otherwise. But you can't chop and change your prediction. So I'm going to go England by a score or maybe more, and France to beat Wales. But honestly, it could be either way.
All right, Chris, thanks a million for joining us, and enjoy the games over the weekend.
Yeah, and you guys.
Chris Jones there, BBC's rugby correspondent. We're going to play you a little clip from Stuart Lancaster in the interview he did with Ger last weekend. First, though, because there's a few comments coming in on the YouTube stream, get your comments into us as well, by all means. We're streaming on all of our social channels, at Off the Ball on Twitter as well. This is going back from Dave, a Leinster fan. This is what we would have been discussing at the top of the show. I disagree, lads. Thought Doris should have got the call back into the team. One of the world's best in his position now, let's face it. Peter O'Mahony did well versus Wales, but Doris is so, so good. Is it a bit much at the moment to say he's one of the best, best in the world's best in his position?
It absolutely is, yeah. He could definitely...
He could be.
He's not.
It definitely seems a stretch.
He's played 5 minutes of international...
No disrespect to Quaylen Doris or anything.
5 minutes of international rugby. He got a great turnover in that 5 minutes, but no, let's kind of calm this down a bit. I mean, and...
We have a habit of going a bit over the top, don't we?
And there's a lot of good young players at the moment. You know, James Ryan and Jacob Scottdale are now the older guys almost, but let's just give these guys time to develop on the international stage.
I am actually fascinated to see what happens in a few weeks' time, even when the Six Nations is over and Jack Conan is fit again at Leinster.
Jack Conan is pushing hard. He's going to be back in the next couple of weeks, because he's eyeing up that Saracens game to be back. And that is, you know, you've got three class number eights. And
three people who have absolute arguments to be made to be starting for Ireland. And they're all at the same time.
And all problems. A bit different as well. I mean, it's just an embarrassment of riches for Leinster, isn't it?
Certainly is. As we discussed, well, Mary in Dungarvan says, how important will Makovunipola's absence be? Such a big game player. Certainly is a big game player, but it probably is just one of those positions for England where they actually do have the strength and depth to deal with it.
They do, but I don't think either of those guys are half as good really as Mako. Chris mentioned he is still one of the best loose heads in the world, and like, you think back to his performance in Dublin last year was honestly one of the best performances I've ever seen in the flesh. The amount of tackles he got, 20 odd tackles for a loose head prop, was just insane. And I think something we didn't really mention on when we were talking to Scrum, like the likes of Joe Marler, Ellis Genge and Kyle Sinclair as well, these guys have, you know, short fuses and they can be got at, and they can be penalty machines as well. So I think Ireland are going to be looking to get under their skin a little bit there too.
It is one thing I do find, I have found with England over the last few years, when games haven't been going their way, they do seem to struggle. If they are giving away penalties early on, they seem to struggle really badly at correcting it. Some teams are very, very good at sussing out the ref in the first 20 minutes, even if they give away a few penalties, picking up on what they can and can't do. And I think if England start a game poorly, that is somewhere where they actually do really, really struggle. One more text coming in. Eddie Jones starting to warm to me. English fan here living in Ireland. His complete knowledge of what he's doing in pre-match press conferences is brilliant. Tactically very astute. That's from Nick from Cornwall, who lives in Bray.
Yes, fair enough.
I think it's spot on,
Yeah, but we want him to throw in a grade. We've still got a couple more days to go, so hopefully he gives us something.
Yeah, he's the absolute classic guy you love to hate, isn't he?
Yeah. And a super coach as well.
Brilliant, absolutely, yeah. Speaking of another brilliant coach, Leinster senior coach Stuart Lancaster sat down with Gerard recently and said, if Ireland can win in Twickenham, then their focus will be only on one thing.
First 5 minutes of that Ireland game against Wales, I'm thinking, Ireland will win this. I could see how tight Wales were defensively. I could see, I mean, they were a great example of a team committing numbers to the breakdown. And yes, it was high risk, high reward, but they didn't get much reward because Ireland's accuracy at the breakdown was good. So they retained the ball, but suddenly their defensive line's getting narrower and the space on the edges. And Ireland have worked hard on their shape, unstructured shape off the ball. And suddenly you've got Stockdale running down one wing and Conway another wing.
Yeah.
And Ireland thoroughly deserved to win. Now, completely different challenge again now going to Twickenham, because you've got, you know, John Mitchell defence, you've got a new guy, Simon Amor, Sevens coach, coming in as the attack. You've got not a lot of footage to go on because the Scotland game was like a washout, literally. France obviously beat England. So what England team will turn up, I'm not sure, if I'm being honest. Obviously, I know a lot of the players and I know this is a team that got to a World Cup final. And on any given day, they can 100% turn up. But Ireland have got a real chance, I think. And if Ireland can get a win at Twickenham, you then talk about Italy at home, and then you talk about France away, and I think Ireland can beat France away.
That wouldn't be a bad start.
We'll be able to start for a Six Nations campaign, wouldn't it, for a new coach? And, you know, I'll be there, you know, probably having a beer with him at some point.
Yeah, that was Stuart Lancaster speaking to Ger last week. You can watch that back in full on our YouTube channel, or you can catch it on our podcast stream and offtheball.com, or on the Go Loud app as well, or wherever you get your podcasts. Before we move on to the women's and 20s, might as well discuss, there was a couple of guests in with the Irish rugby team this week. So you had like one of the most famous Irish people of all time, Paul O'Connell, and Bono as well.
I'm with you on your dad. I'm glad you went that way.
One
as
of
well.
The greatest living Irish people,
because even,
and Bono.
Even when I was there yesterday, we were asking the players about it. My first questions wanted to be about Paul O'Connell coming in, not about Bono.
I couldn't care less about Bono.
Yeah, it's interesting. Look, it's something Andy Farrell has really been hammering on about, is this theme of Irishness since he's taken over, and how, you know, he wants a team that the country can be proud of. And you know, and wants the players to understand what it means to put on the green jersey. Like, it's very interesting, because does that suggest that because he was in the system, let's not forget, does that suggest that he feels that maybe some of them didn't quite understand that? But I would like to think or assume that any player, you know, who's putting on an Ireland jersey knows what it means. Now, obviously, it's great to have different voices coming in. Bono came in, but for my mind, you're going to get more out of having Paul O'Connell coming in for the week than Bono coming
in and serving
Johnny Sexton his super, or whatever it was. Like, I mean, it's great. Like, it's great for the squad. Yeah, it is. It really is. And the thing about it is, like, Ireland have had guests in before. This isn't like a big thing Andy Farrell has done. You know, Christy Moore has gone into the squad. They've had comedians and things like that. It's not something that Joe Schmidt didn't do. But I know if I was in there, I'd be more interested in picking Paul O'Connell's brain rather than picking Bono's brain. That's all I'm going to say.
I think a lot of people would agree with you there as well. So we also have the women's team. They're playing 12:45 in Doncaster on Sunday. And the under-20s are taking on England at Franklin's Gardens in Northampton tomorrow night. We'll start in the women's team. 2 wins out of 2. Hard to know what the expectation is here, because there is just such a gulf between France, England and the rest in the Women's Six Nations.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to. You know, people have sort of mentioned that this is a free shot for Ireland, the men's team going to Twickenham this weekend, which I don't agree with at all. I definitely think this is a free shot for the women.
I don't know. I was half thinking it at the same time, though, if there's a bad defeat. Like, you saw what England did against Scotland, 10 days ago in that postponed game. Like, if England come out and, hopefully not, if they absolutely put a real beating in on Ireland, you know, there is the potential for that to linger on and be damaging, because you've another break week, but you've Italy after that, and Italy are very, very good.
Mm.
Italy are very, very good.
Yeah, like, you know, I'd be optimistic that they wouldn't put the kind of score that they put on Scotland. They've had two good wins at home. Home being probably the key word against teams that are absolutely nowhere near on the level that they're going to face now. But there's a lot of things that they're doing well. You know, we speak about sort of teams understanding what the coaches want you to do. And I think we're starting to see now what Adam Griggs wants his players to do. They look much more comfortable in the system. They're offloading the ball. They're looking to play the ball wide. It's the real, Adam Griggs, for anyone who doesn't know, is a Kiwi as well. So it's a real Kiwi kind of flair. And players look to be enjoying it. I think they'll be realistic about what lies ahead this weekend. We've talked about Baveen Parsons a good bit on the show. She's a big loss. I mean, she's missing out because she's going studying for her Leaving Cert, which we mentioned.
Feels it. Strange
it's
saying
like
this,
it's but yeah. when the press release dropped during the week and you see it in black and white, it just really hits home about how young she is. But she's a big loss. But I think other players who've been in the scene for the last few years have really stepped up. The likes of Cliona Maloney, Sene Naupu, Larissa Muldoon is back in the team as well, and she's a stalwart from the last few years as well. So I think there's a lot of good things going. And you know, you have Parsons who's come in and done well. But someone who I've been really impressed with is Dorothy Wall, a 19-year-old who, geez, I passed her a couple of weeks ago out in the High Performance Centre, and she is a unit. Like, she is just, you can see she's built for it. And you can see in the break she's made in the back row that she's going to be a star. Still only 19. I don't think she hasn't started either the Six Nations games yet, but you've seen flashes of what she's capable of. And while, you know, Parsons has probably got the headlines because she's an 18-year-old scoring the tries, I think Dorothy Wall is a serious, serious prospect for Ireland.
Yeah, and the physicality, I think, is huge as well, because initially, maybe, I remember it was 2 years ago when Bevan Parsons, she was only 16, she was brought in, like, training with the squad, and I remember speaking to Fiona Steed at the time, and she was just really worried that, is that just too much, too young to be bringing in a young player? But you see Bevan Parsons now, and even though she's like 18, she's a kid doing her Leaving Cert, like, physically she's built for adult rugby at the moment. Like, there's absolutely no question of her being able to cope with the physicality of the game. Like, she seriously seems to be up at that level. And just a few other players as well, I think you can really notice, like, pinpointed Cliona Maloney, Lauren Delaney, Anna Kaplis, people who are playing over in England. You can actually you can see how big the Premiership is and how high the standards are by the performances that they've put in over the first couple of weeks, because you can really see the skill level that they have now.
And the thing about that is, like, it's the same with the men's team. You want to see your players playing in Ireland, but it's just the AIL for the women just isn't set up for that at the moment, unfortunately. But you think back, you think of the girls that you mentioned there, they're coming back into the squad. You can imagine that they're demanding more from those around them as well, because they're used to, like, more competitive environments over in England. But you'd hope that the IRFU are looking at that now and going, there's no reason why we can't put a bit of money into the AIL. And again, the AIL in the men's and women's is very different, because the women don't have the outlet of playing Pro 14 or Champions Cup. So that has to be the way the IRFU go. You've got to put a bit of money into that and try and keep these players here. And that will raise the standards of across the board, I think, because young girls are now looking at the likes of Dorothy Wall, Bevan Parsons, and it's a new look team. They have girls to look up to. You know, it used to be like the Niamh Briggs and Nora Stapletons of this world. There's a new breed there now, and I really think the IRFU need to capitalise on that.
Under-20s then tomorrow night in Franklin's Gardens. They're also two wins out of two as well. They've made four changes from the side that beat Wales. Ethan McEnroy and Hayden Hyde returned to the back line after they both missed the game against Wales. John McKee comes in for his first start of the Six Nations at hooker. And then Alex Soroka at flanker comes in, having been on the bench against Scotland. They've been excellent against Scotland and Wales, but in parts in those games, they have actually switched off a little bit. And I know in some cases, because bonus points have been secured, but there have been a few cold moments in them.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that's like they've still got two bonus point wins and they're sitting sitting top of the table ahead of England at the moment. So you wouldn't expect a team who's pretty much never played before to be perfect, whatever about and a professional men's team hitting the ground running, you know. So the fact they've gotten two bonus points and there's lots to work on, I think, is a massive positive. You mentioned Ethan McElroy and Hayden Hyde coming back in. It was interesting. There was an outbreak of mumps in the camp, which is why the two lads missed out in the game. It's going around up north, apparently, because Tom Stewart, the hooker, got it too, and he's now on the bench, and he started both two games. And it was interesting, he was out at their press conference on Monday, and they brought in two of the lads, and I'm kind of thinking, are we sure this is okay? Like, you know, the last thing I need is to get a case of the mumps, but...
not in England week.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, whatever about the follow week. But, yeah, so they're going along really well. I think, you know, England away, it's the same as the men's team, is always a massive step up. 2 years ago I went over and covered them in England, and honestly, like, the difference in physicality was huge. But talking to Colm Tucker,
the big Irish team,
to Colm Tucker, the forwards coach, this week, and I was actually asking him, is this actually a bigger pack or does it just look like it? And he said, no, it really is. Like, they're heavier lads, so you would hope that they'll be able to sort of withstand that. And you know what, I was thinking about this earlier on the way in. This Ireland team are kind of going under the radar again, and it's similar to last year. They've got a couple of very, very good players without having, you know, a team full of James Ryans and Jacob Stockdale's, that team in 2016. But this team are going under the radar, I think, nicely as well. They're, like you mentioned, they've a lot of improvements still to make, but two wins from two. And I think a lot of players who people now are starting, you know, like said Jack Crowley, Tom Ahern, people are now starting to know these guys' names, which I think is only bodes well.
Yeah, is that maybe down to the fact that I don't know, is it true? I just always would have got the impression or felt that up until the last few years, Irish players definitely developed later than their English counterparts. So our 20s teams, we were never competing year in, year out to win the championship and stuff. It was generally 2-3 wins, and you'd see those guys in 2-3 years' time developing. But there are a lot of guys, I think, in the last couple of years, particularly since the 2016 team that got to the World Final, that they just seem to be at a higher level year in, year out.
Yeah, the obvious thing to say is, like, you look at what the school systems are doing. Like, I mean, particularly in Leinster, even though I know everyone else is playing catch up in that regard, but the Leinster schools are basically mini sub academies. Mm. You know what I mean? So that, I don't think it's a coincidence that they are making the step up to professional rugby, but that's also down to the coaching that they're getting. I think Noel McNamara has done a super job. He's obviously working with the Leinster Academy as well, and he's encouraging them to play, you know, positive rugby. It's not all about winning. That's one of their big mantras in there. They want them to play the right way, not the way that's actually going to grind out a gritty win. Which is funny, because that's not obviously how it works in professional rugby.
Yeah.
It's very different, but it's great fun to watch as well, isn't it? Like, 20s rugby is just, it's so exciting. There's loads of tries, and I think we'll see a lot of tries in Franklin's Gardens on Friday again.
Right. Predictions time for this weekend. So, as we've been running throughout the championship, myself and Cian, Tracy versus Tracy. If you pick the winning team right, you get 1 point. If you get within three of the winning margin, you get 2 points. And if you get the exact winning margin correct, you get 5. So I'm in a bit of trouble. I'm 12-4 down after the opening two games. Although I went bold last week, or 2 weeks ago. Yeah. I went for the draw between England and Scotland. I thought I was onto a winner there for a good bit of that game. When that rain and wind was coming down, 3-3 midway through the second half, I was thinking, oh,
I was watching it too, going, oh, I remember Neil said that, and I was kind of thinking, what did I say again? I definitely didn't say a draw, but yeah, snuck it there.
Well, I can tell you what you said. You said England by 6, and that got you 3 points. In the Ireland-Wales game, I said Wales by 3, I got nothing. You said Ireland by 4, so you got a point for that. And then France 35, Italy 22. I said France by 30, you said France by 29. We each get a point. So you are 12-4 up on me, and we just about have enough time to go through our predictions for this weekend. Italy-Scotland. I've gone first the last few weeks.
Okay.
So you're going to go first this
for
weekend.
For Italy-Scotland.
Italy-Scotland.
I will go Scotland by 6.
I said Scotland 11. Wales and France.
Yeah, this is very tough. I'm going to go Wales at home. I'm going to back Wales at home, I think, by 3. I think it's going to be a very, very close game, but I'm not ready to go all in on this French team just yet. I've learned in the past about that.
Yeah, I think home advantage, and I think the break week has come at a bad time for France as well. It just killed a bit of momentum. I think Wales by 8.
Yeah, Wales by 8.
And then Twickenham Sunday, the big one.
Yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic about Ireland's chances for all the reasons we talked about with the players that they're missing. But like, Irish wins in Twickenham are so rare. Mm. It wouldn't surprise me if this team pulled it off, because I just don't think the fear factor is there. But I reckon England by maybe 4.
I just about edge England. And I think it's just home advantage just about swings it as well. I'm thinking a 1-score game, England 6 was what I went for.
Close enough. There's going close to be. It's the moving week in the Six Nations. It could be the moving week in our predictions.
Exactly.
Well.
Yeah. Certainly. A few swing results there. So, Keane, thanks a million for coming in.
Cheers, Neil.
We'll be back again in 2 weeks' time, ahead of the Ireland Italy game. But on the way after 1 o'clock, it's OTB Gold, a piece where Kevin Kilbane looks into the story of one of his ancestors, the great legendary Irish boxer Johnny Kilbane. And then from 2 o'clock, your first chance to hear the full interview with Brian O'Driscoll ahead of this weekend's Six Nations game against England. We played out part of his chat with Ciarán Owen on OTBM this morning. But OTB Sports Radio has the whole thing in full today. That's coming up at 2 o'clock. You can listen to OTB Sports Radio 24/7 on the Go Loud app or on offtheball.com/radio. We'll speak to you again in a couple of weeks.
The Six Nations Show on OTB Sports Radio.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.